Barry, take us back to the development of the Invercargill Centre. Talk us through the kind of the concerns that you had with regards to future-proofing it, to making sure it was a venue, a facility for the long-term future and not just one for today.
I think for us, which was really important, as was to create a venue which was accessible for all, that didn't provide a space that if you come in a wheelchair, you went in that door. If you could walk, you went in one door. So we created a centre that is fully inclusive, that doesn't have signs or symbols to indicate that people should step in one door and out the other, but an open and airy space that just creates something that's accessible for all people to come in, regardless of their ability, regardless of their stage with sport, regardless of their demographic. They make use of a sports training centre which allows them to develop and achieve their very best. The design phase was very important, and I'm a bit of a fraud because I turned up when the work was done and I rolled into a fantastic new centre when a design team within Sports Scotland and at the National Centre had worked through a process of consulting all of our stakeholders to understand, what do you really need? What do you look for from a training centre? What would allow you to prepare for a major games? What would prepare you and allow you to reach your potential? And the first discussion was really around, if you're going to create a hotel, how many accessible rooms do you create? And the standard would say somewhere around 20%. And we thought, if we start from scratch, we create 100% occupancy which can be accessible. And for us, that's a really unique feature. And unique with consultation with groups, that some groups and some athletes can't sleep in a room that has carpet. So we have four rooms in our accommodation that doesn't have carpet. We have six rooms that have hoists. We have 7-foot beds, which seems great in principle for tall people like myself. That's until you go and try and allocate some bedding for a 7-foot bed, and that's slightly more challenging. But everything's been considered to make it as accommodating as possible for athletes of all level. And the key part of that was about the consultation and the process to ensure that the venue was prepared for the future and prepared for athletes of all levels to access the site.
Peter, you told us about Rotterdam Ahoy, but your other hat is the president of the European Arenas Association. What are some of the trends that you're observing that are affecting particularly new venues being built, but also existing venues, and ways that rights holders, stadium operators, are trying to ensure that these venues are appropriate for the next 20 years?
I think it's very difficult to create a venue who will last 20 years. The product life cycle of a venue is a little bit shorter, so you have to invest maybe after 10 or 15 years your new ideas. We are lucky in the European Arena Association because we have 35 members in 22 countries. We did last year more than 20 million tickets, more than 3,000 shows. So we are not competitors, we try to learn from each other. We come twice a year together in like general meetings, and there's always a venue who is rebuilding or do some other stuff, and we look in their kitchen literally, and they share all those ideas together with us, and it's a very learning curve for all of us to develop the great venues that we are. But if you look at major topics, I think security is one of the major ones at the moment, not only software but also hardware. After Bataclan, everything changes also in our arenas. We saw Manchester, so we speak about that a lot, and we created, supported also a big conference. It was now the second time in London, specifically on security. So that is just an example that started a few times ago, and it will never go away anymore, I think.
You said that the lifetime of a venue is 15, 20 years, and then you can expect fresh investment. So take something like the new Tottenham Stadium, which had £1 billion spent on it. That cost is increasing. It's still not finished. How long can we expect that investment to last for before it needs fresh investment and fresh innovation?
I believe strongly in flexibility. If we are now building a new venue, it's 100 million euros spent, but we look at a lot of venues in Europe. It's a conference center and a music hall. So I think flexibility is very important, and you can do more than one kind of event in your venue. So what we are going to do is build a conference-style auditorium of 2,750, but we can get the chairs out in a good way, Then it will be a concert hall of 7,000 people. Creating those kinds of creativity in your venue is, I think, very important to make the life cycle of your venue longer and the spend better.
Alex, Party Rent, this is kind of your area. This is what you do. You bring in equipment to venues that allows them to refresh it and to not have to make the full investment in furniture, but they can rent it, and then that then has has multiple uses, and you can exchange it for fresh innovations further down the line.
Yes, exactly. So sharing economy is very, very important these days. So if you can talk to a venue for them to not go into the full invest for the furniture they need throughout the whole event, and just tell them, okay, do partial rent and only buy what you really need, let's say five times a week. That's something you should actually buy, and rent the rest. So you're always very flexible on what clients you are actually having for your event these days. And that's where we come in. We have our slogan, we like to create atmosphere and make it, cozy and, get the best out of the venue for the customer, depending on what they like to do. You know, if it's a concert, if it's an evening event, if it's a conference, we are very flexible on doing different setups.
And what are some of the ways that you help? What are some of the ways that you help to contribute to the atmosphere or the feel of a stadium that means that that investment doesn't go to waste, but is then refreshed and renewed as the stadium's lifetime progresses?
Exactly. Yeah. If you say, okay, we go for a long time rental for over 3 years. After that, we can take back the furniture, we refurbish it, and you get a new setup, but the old furniture we can then use again and have it for other customers to use.
Barry, are these some concerns that were, I know you said you came in when everything was done and you had a lovely design venue, but even so, are these still things that play on your mind, particularly with regards to sustainability and ensuring that things that you put into the facility have long-term use and they're not just going to be thrown away after a year and then you have to purchase more?
Absolutely. It's something that continues to change and to challenge us. Since moving in about 18 months ago, we've made some adaptations based on feedback from users that have been in and around the building for some time. But equally, we're always looking to evolve and ensure we stay as advanced as we possibly can. Our focus is in preparing people for the world stage or on that journey within sport, and that's really key that they have the best access, that they have the very best environment, they have the best nutrition, and with all of that comes some investment in some way. We've prepared a facility that has sustainability within it around some of the wind turbines that we would have within some of the solar panels within the design of the building in itself. But we'll continue need to evolve both our technology and our facilities to ensure they meet the ever-changing demands of our consumers as well.
Peter, is there a balance to be struck between sustainability and environmental concerns and revenue for a stadium? Is investing in the long term in more sustainable solutions, it's obviously clearly more expensive. Do rights holders and stadium operators have to take this into consideration? Do they have one eye on the bottom line while they're trying to future-proof their venues?
I think sustainability is very, very important, but I'm an entrepreneur, so I have to look also to the return on investment. If an investment is, like example, more than 15 years, then it's very difficult for us as entrepreneurs to choose for that idea, and then you have to wait a little bit longer, then the investment will be shorter or a different one. So it's a top priority, but you have to make it back with events and clients who are willing to pay, in the end, the bill of the venue.
And in the kind of development and design process, what are some of the ways that you're thinking of to maximise footfall, maximise potential revenues further down the line?
Yeah, I see a lot on LED lighting and a lot on software. And what we did is, what I learned is, of course, we did the same thing as everyone else. So we spoke to clients, spoke to colleagues about a new venue. But what we did was a little bit new, and the architect was not a little bit fond about it in the beginning, but he loved it in the end, is we made our venue in a virtual reality environment. And then we checked the venue on a virtual reality environment, bringing all the people in and let it work, but it was not real, it was virtual reality. And we saw that there were a lot of smaller mistakes in the building, so we corrected that in the definitive development, and it cost us less money, of course, if we do it afterwards. Those smaller things that worked out very well for us. Use virtual reality possibilities before we built the building as a whole.
And that's obviously a development that wouldn't have been possible even 5 years ago, really.
No, I don't think so. No, it's quite new.
Yeah. Anything similar employed or any other innovations, either Alex or Barry that you've seen across the industry that you think are changing the way that stadium operators and facility operators are thinking about their facilities?
I think for us the key has been flexibility to create something that has dual use, so we have that element where we bring athletes in who prepare for a games, but as we heard from Dr McConnell earlier speaking about the priorities particularly for Scotland, it's also around communities and them ensuring they have access to the groups. So we have school groups who make use of the residential centre, we have clubs within communities all around Scotland and beyond who'll come and make use, and having that level of flexibility allows us to run a business but at the same time contribute to our Scottish Government outcomes that we also align to equally. So conference space that sits alongside that area, the sports space that is also accessible for communities gives us a balance of both. In actual fact, one of the key successes we have as a national centre is when you find the crossover between different groups who come into the area and make use of it. So you could have a Manchester United team who's sitting next to a GB Boccia Paralympic squad who's sitting next to a primary school who are there for an experience, and that crossover is really important. So having the flexibility to do that is really important for our business model for the future.
What are the challenges associated there? Because I imagine it's quite difficult to create a facility that's suitable for both Manchester United and a primary school of Scottish children. How do you plan around that, and how do you design the venue so that it's suitable for all abilities?
It's been based around consultation. The accommodation that those teams use are the same regardless of the user, and that's been the key part of the design. The consultation has allowed us to create something that meets the needs for all groups. It's not bespoke, and you know, a Manchester United would enter in that door, or a Romanian under 20 rugby squad would enter in another door. They cross over. In actual fact, we find that when we bring people in the right environment, they're quite happy to cross over, they're quite happy to engage with each other if it's in the right environment. And it's the environment that allows that to happen. There's a great amount of planning that goes in it from our staff team to ensure that meal times and the planning of sports access is absolutely right. But that's what makes it unique, and that's what provides a really memorable experience for people is the crossover. I look at it in a way, and I've been hearing the discussion today, it almost creates a mini athletes village that we live and breathe every day of the week. And that's the type of environment that it creates. And that's the feedback that we get from the groups who attend the centre.
Alex, obviously what you're doing is providing temporary solutions to rights holders and event operators. Is this something that's increasing? Because I've certainly, from my experience, have been to a lot of sporting events over the past few years where the facilities have nearly all been temporary. They've been kind of stadiums put up in the centre of a city for an event that lasts a week or 2 weeks, and then it's completely dismantled. Is this a trend that's growing across the industry, do you think, as we have more of an eye on sustainability and more different cities are bidding for different kinds of events?
Yes, definitely. Because you just don't have that much, that high of an invest you have to do to get all the furniture in for, you know, just the 2 weeks of an event. So rental is very common and is very often used these days because... You have a venue with 10 different rooms you have to set up, but you need 10 different setups. So we can provide those 10 different setups depending on if you need a lounge, if you need high tables. Otherwise, it's very hard maybe for for them. You know, what do you do with the furniture afterwards? They just throw it away, and it's not very sustainable. And we can just take it back and provide it to the next customer.
Yeah, so Peter, I wanted to come back to you on that, actually, on the kind of long-term thinking of venues. What you mentioned earlier about the kind of life cycle of a venue, how often it needs refreshing. How do you try and encourage venue and facility operators to think long-term? I'm thinking of things like Juventus played in the Stadio delle Alpi for about 20 years, and then they demolished it and they built a whole new stadium. Now, that's clearly not a sustainable model for anyone, never mind sports teams. How do you try and encourage long-term thinking?
I think try to use the old venue and make it new. So we did it twice, and it worked very well. And especially for our arena, it was founded in 1971. And the heritage of that venue was so big that it was more than worthwhile to refurbish that in a good way, that it has a new future. So I think to try to rebuild your venue in a good way, make it bigger, it needs to be bigger, and the consumer needs were very different than in the 70s now, but it worked out very well, and there's still the old atmosphere of that venue and where the Rolling Stones were, but it has a new perspective for the future. I strongly believe in that.
And presumably part of that is just getting it right the first time, right? Building a venue, as Barry was talking about, that is designed for the future rather than one that is just built to kind of maximize revenues in the short term.
Yeah, I think so. That's very important, and it doesn't have to be an architect project. It is, in the end, it's for the consumers. In the end, it's for the people who go there and have a great experience. That's much more important.
All right, because we're running a bit late, I promise that we try and wrap up quickly. So if there's any questions from the audience, now's the time. One. Ben, right behind you.
Yeah, if you look from a venue perspective, of course we do, but much more important is to look at an organizer perspective. So we are also an organizer of a lot of events, and I couldn't imagine that we organize the Rotterdam Games Week next year for our own risk 4 years ago. We see a lot of, we saw Riot, we did the League of Legends in Rotterdam as well. Now we're going to organize for younger people, boys and girls, the whole Games Week with the city, not only in the Ahoy, but all over the city of Rotterdam. So adapting new concepts in a new way from the organizer perspective is very, very important. And you see also for the older people, we had the Night of the Proms last weekend, and I think the average age was 65, and he had a great evening. We can do them all, and it's you have to look at that very carefully, otherwise you're out of business, I think. Yeah, you're right, Matthew.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad we got to mention esports, because I'd completely forgotten. That's something very important for the future to look forward to and for venues to consider. Unless there's any more questions, we'll wrap that up now. No, good. All right, thank you to Peter, Barry and Alex.